The following podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network is
provided by Vision Automotive.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Moving the Needle, where we're trying to talk about all things education, in particular those things that work with charter schools and what we're able to do for the city of Rochester. So glad that you're here today. I'm Pastor Sebrin O. Johnson.
And I'm Dr. Paul Miller.
We're grateful that we have Dr. Miller back with us again. I'm the Alpha. He's the Omega. I start things. He finishes things. I open doors. He closes doors. We're trying to get things together today. And so we're going to have some conversation about great school models. What's the secret sauce that makes a school really function properly? And Dr. Miller in a minute is going to introduce our guest for today. And we're going to have some real conversation about what makes a certain school do what it does. And so, Dr. Miller, can you kick us off?
Yes, sir. We got a great guest in the house today. We got this brother who is at UPrep. I've known him since we were probably teenagers. I think he's a little older than me. He's still a little older, age before beauty, right? So this brother here, though, he went on, had a phenomenal high school career, had a phenomenal college career, but then he came back to his community to put in work. And he's been putting in work for a lot of years. He's been putting it in through the school systems, through the radio station, through many other things. So this brother is no stranger to this city. He is none other than my cousin-in-law, Raheem Miller. We got Raheem Miller in the house today. Rod, tell us who you are, kind of what do you do. Give us a little history for the people that may not know.
Well, first, like I said, I'm pretty much raised here in Rochester. You know, I attended East High School, so a product of this Rochester City School District. And went on, to earn a scholarship to Michigan State. And then, from there, I just felt like I didn't really want to pursue the sports aspect, but I wanted to come back to my community and maybe, get into education.
Why education, though? Out of all things you could have done, why did you choose that? Why was being back in education? Because I think, now don't correct me wrong, there was some talks of the league on the table,
yes,
for you and
yep,
some other things.
Yep.
And what happened with that as well? Because I know, that was potentially some possible.
I mean, to be honest, when you playing at that level, I wanted to use my mind instead of my body. I got out kind of injury free, had a couple injuries, here and there, but, I want to be able to, be 60 and be able to walk, So I thought I was probably trying to use my mind more than my body. And I felt like I could have an imprint on today's youth.
That's good, man. We got three brothers here. I think we all went to city school district schools. I graduated from Franklin. You said you went to East.
Right.
School Without Walls. So we've done that. You went to Michigan State. Small time program. I went to Union College. No, but you know what? And I think we all play ball,
right?
Which is I owe a lot of leadership things to just sports in general, with playing football and running track. But tell me something: when you get to a big time program, seriously, like Michigan State, and football is life, and there's some decisions you have to choose in which direction you're going to go. You're back in Rochester. You're working in education. But you were at Michigan State playing football. For those aspiring athletes who want to go on and play big-time ball, and they want to come out of it with more than just some memories of playing, what did you have to do at Michigan? How did you survive? How did you make sure you got an education? What was the deal there?
You make a great point. The biggest thing there is you got to be disciplined. Discipline is the key, back then, the rules have changed a little bit.
The NILs weren't around.
NILs weren't around.
There was other stuff around.
Right, it's supposed to be a 20-hour rule. Yeah. So some of those things, they didn't play fair. So a typical day might be getting up in the morning around 5 to go work out and then taking my classes early because I have practice in the afternoon. So, I got my workout in, my first class at 8. I finished maybe about 1, practice at 2. Practice about 4 or 5 hours, come back, maybe go to a study hall and be back at, bed by 9 and just do it all over, So it takes a lot of discipline because some days you might say, hey, oh my God, maybe I sleep in and miss this class. Yeah, yeah. Nah, you got to, you know, you got to stay disciplined. So, you know, and it's making that transition, you know, and going to like, you know, into the charter school. I think those are things, intangibles I want to teach the kids, that there are always going to be some hard decisions, and but you need to stay disciplined. And sometimes those hard decisions will build character.
So what would you say, like, the major, because I believe, did you work in the public school district for a little while?
Yeah, I was at Marshall for 10 years.
I thought so. So if what would you say the major differences for somebody who might not understand the difference between the traditional public school, like Marshall, right?
Right.
Or the charter school, you prep. What do you say, if you were making a comparison, on why one is probably a little more successful than the other, and what does that look like?
Well, I think the major thing is when you're in a big district, you know, a lot of decisions come from downtown. You know, it's a lot of red tape. When you're in a charter school, it's kind of like you the home office. So you can make a lot of decisions. You know, like say if somebody came in and it was, you know, they wanted to do a field trip. You know, I can go to Mr. Larkin, our CEO, and say, hey, we got these guys, an opportunity here, let's do it. And we can get it done the next day. You know, sometimes in a, you know, big district, you have to, you know, maybe get the proper signage and different things. So you can do stuff right at the jump.
Got you. Now, there are some things. One of the great things about UPrep is their CTE program. And I know that that Mr. Larkin, he brings a lot of that experience to UPrep. Shout out to him, my alpha brother, 06. So he brings a lot of that experience to UPrep, and he really does advise that the school takes advantage of many programs that serve as accompanying programs and alternatives to college. There's a big argument out about what happens when you offer these alternative programs. Does it give more opportunities for individuals to go on and succeed, or does it detour from people who otherwise would go to college? What do you think the benefit or the danger would be for those CTE programs?
I think the benefit is you know, we still set the standards. So even when our students are in school, we want them to get the best education. So, if they want to go to college, they're going to be college ready, and they also have the credentials to go to college. But, you know, some students, you know, don't come from like well-off families, and, you know, you can put yourself in debt also in college. So, you know, you got that CTE program where you know, you got those trades where some young men rather go through the trades and not inquire debt.
Right.
You know.
So you have those opportunities. We're going to be real. And I think Paul's going to jump in on this too, but let's be real. Some of our testosterone filled boys can be a lot. Some of them are kind of like Paul Miller when he was young, way back in the day. That it just always into something. How do you deal with the boys that they're rambunctious and they have other things, and there's the pull of money and the girls outside of UPrep and gangs and all those things, and parents. How do you deal with those types of boys? And in particular, how do you deal with their parents who may not always understand the way that the deans work there?
Gotcha. That's a great question. I think the number one thing that's a little secret to our sauce is the relationships that we build. You know, with the parent and with the student, I think sometimes, you know, they're coming from a different environment. It could have been a city school district, it could have been any other school. But sometimes, you know, things are not handled, you know, certain ways. So when you have a student that might get in trouble, he's probably labeled a troubled kid. And really he's not. It's just that's the easiest decision to make, to say, hey, we don't want him in our building. You know? So let's say he comes over to UPrep. We don't, you know, he might have that little rough in the beginning, but once he understands that we're not going anywhere and that we're going to be part, like, family, then you start seeing those changes. Because, you know, he knows that we truly cares. We're not faking it. I think that's the biggest thing, is those relationships that we build, not only with the parent, but with the student, that are, like, you know, lifelong. You know, I still have students that graduate the first couple of years. In fact, where I just recently hired two former graduates.
Okay. Wow. Shout them out.
That's Sterling Newsom and Jamin Appleberry.
Right. Okay.
So, and that's what we want to be a part of. You know, it's tradition. We want to hire our own. You know, they went off. They did their thing. One was, you know, in the Air Force for 6 years. And then he was like, you know what? I think I want to come and give back. So,
you know, and I think those are important pieces. Like, I know as building a school, right, I think of the four pieces that I always talk about, like the four pillars. So the first one is, and I also ran two all-boys schools, right? So we had predominantly 97% black and brown young men, right? And so in 90% poverty. So we built it off of building relationships. So there were systems and structures that were specifically designed to teach people how to build relationships. And so not only was that a key crucial component, the part that was so important is that, so we would try to, I think Raheem mentioned earlier on the live show, is that they tried to hire people that looked like the kids as well. Mm. So we tried to hire people, like our administrative team was predominantly black or brown folks. And that didn't exclude anybody, right? But at the same time, we were purposeful to try to put people in front of kids that looked like them. See, we have that opportunity to do that within the charter school, where when you look at some other populations or some traditional schools, that doesn't always happen. If you look at the systemic racism that happens, the politics, the bureaucracy, what's happening is that there's a lot of white folks in charge. Mm. And so not necessarily true in some of the charter schools.
Correct.
Not all the charter schools, but the ones who are specifically very successful often are putting people who look like the kids in front of there. So building relationships. Then what we focused on, we built systems around teaching and learning. And specifically, again, it's about the discipline, it's about the structure around teaching and learning and what that looks like. And there was organizational systems that we utilized. Third was, how do we use data to inform instructional decisions? And then the fourth was, how do we hold everybody accountable? And these were the pillars that held everything up. And then there were systems off of them that made sure the schools were successful. And it sounds like UPrep has a lot of those things in place as well to make sure that they're successful. You know, speaking of that, Raheem, why do you think that your model works, especially when, you know, young black males are failing other places? They're failing in the traditional district.
Right. I think going back to what I said earlier is that, you know, we have these young men sometimes don't come from a nice home. Sometimes don't, you know, have, you know, both parents in the household. Sometimes don't get along with the parents in the household. So I think when you go to UPrep, it's an avenue of, you know, you can come in and not have to worry about the streets, not have to worry about the home life. You can come in and focus on the education, focus on, you know, the relationships you build with your peers, also with the administration, with the teachers. So it's all, we make it feel like a home. So we make UPrep feel like family. So, you know, when you go to that school, you don't want to, you know, be uptight. You want to have, like, you know, have some fun, but also be serious at the same time. And I think our young men understand that. And they can come to us with anything, you know, anything, you know. I heard it all, like, you know, they heard gunshots at nighttime, you know, it's like they don't feel safe, you know. I mean, you know, we might hook them up with some programs, you know. So it's the holistic part of the child and the family.
You know what, you mentioned not feeling safe. And that's a sad, because if we're going to be honest, we're three black males in this room, and it's rare that we can just experience that feeling of safety, that I can walk around some neighborhoods and I worry about gunshots or I worry about drugs or what can happen, but I don't feel safe. But I can go to suburban areas and walk around them and see the eyes staring and I don't feel safe.
Correct.
It's like, when do we get a chance just to, like, let our hair down, if I had any, and feel safe for a little while? And I'm wondering if firstly, if school provides that avenue of safety that I can, for a little while in my life, I can just breathe it all out. And if it does, I'm asking you this, Dr. Miller, and if it does provide that avenue of safety, do we feel that in Rochester there is room for additional buildings of safety for charter schools? Do we feel that we've reached our max? Do we feel that there's demand and we need 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more charter schools to give more kids that feeling of safety and belonging and family?
Well, if you look at it, we had 15,000 applications last year, yeah, for 3,000 spots. Yeah. So I think that the data doesn't, numbers don't lie, people do. You know how you interpret the data can sometimes lie, but that, we're not lying here. This, if there's 15,000 applications and 3,000 spots, that means people want a different opportunity. That means people want something that's safe. They want somewhere. And that doesn't mean that every day is perfect in the charter school. That doesn't mean that nothing ever happens or it don't go down there. So for those people listening, oh, yeah, there was a fight at U Prep last week. You know, I'm being presumptuous. Right. There might not have been, or there probably was. You know what? Because that stuff happens. But at the end of the day, the goal is to create this safe environment. And there's certain things that are in place in these charter schools that are not in place in other schools and in the school district. And so these aspects of the structure, the discipline, the fact is that just even the way that teachers, the curriculum and the things that teachers have to follow on a daily basis, the structures that are in place are creating these environments that are very safe, organized, respectful and responsible place. Right. And so there's absolutely more room for it here in Rochester. It just needs that Rochester needs to continue to shift our mindsets to see that there's other options, that there's other choices, and it's okay. And guess what? If the city school district, the traditional city school district, is an option for your child, that's great. More power to you. I just suggest that people really think about it. Are you going because because of tradition and because of history? Oh, my mom went to Franklin, or my dad went to Franklin, or my grandfather went to East, or whatever, versus is it really because, it's the best and the safest option for your child? And that's what we need to get away from, that closed mindset, and open up to opportunity.
So you talk about a closed mindset, and this is what This is what gets me. And I don't know if you all heard this, and if it rang in your minds like it did mine, but a statement was made not too long ago that we are coming after our children. We're coming after our kids. And the insinuation was that charter schools had come in and stolen kids, and that they're going to be the powers to be is coming and taking those kids back. And it rang to me as, wow, language of the antebellum South, that somehow something was taken away from a master.
And this was a black woman that said this.
And that master is coming back after their kids as though institutions like UPrep are stealing or brainwashing. Or what do you say to folks who say that you're taking their kids? What is your answer to something like that?
Well, I don't think we're taking any kids. Like I said, I think everybody has a choice. If a parent choose to put their kid at UPrep, that's great. If a parent choose to put their kid at RCSU, that's also great. Right. But I look at it as, us not stealing kids, but us trying to provide for kids. You know, opportunities, education, safety. I would say this, one of the things that we do well is that, we check our kids. You know, so like, you know, I always, my famous saying, and to, all my deans, I say to them, I said, students are going to do what you allow them to do. You know, so if you don't correct behavior right away, then that's what you're going to get throughout the year. So I think those are things that we do. And when you see somebody saying, hey, you know, we want to take kids back, it burns me, because you got kids that are being successful. So you're not looking at their success. You're looking at dollars and cents. Mm-hmm. And that's where we go wrong. You got to look at their success, you know. So if they're doing well, you know, in that environment, then you should allow them to do well in that environment.
You know, and we were having a conversation earlier as well, is that you think about it. If UPrep had the opportunity to grow, and UPrep could grow and expand into a larger building, it would have the ability to service more young black and brown young men in this community. It would have the opportunity to potentially save more lives because of young men getting educated and having a diploma and have the ability to have a successful future and beyond, versus, the alternative of not graduating. And not graduating, black men in the district are not graduating. It's just what it is. And the COVID numbers are about to go away, so we're going to see what it really is.
Right.
But at the end of the day, they're graduating. What would it mean to y'all to be able to have the opportunity to get somewhere that's a bigger space? And what would that look like? What would that opportunity look like for you, Brett?
Listen, that would be a blessing. I, the opportunity, something like, look, that have our own space, that can house, you know, we have 525 students. I mean, you know, we would look at our own space that maybe can house 1,000, just so if we do have an opportunity for growth, we can. But, you know, facilities where we can just walk out the back door and there's a football field, you know, maybe a basketball arena where we can, you know, house, you know, a crowd for a home game, you know. So that, you know, that will look excellent, you know. But like I said, we're 13 years in and we're still looking, you know. That's which is, you know, and with our track record, we're doing all the great things to provide for our students. And I think the one thing, going back to the last question, is, you know, if we can provide for our students and they can, you know, be able to, you know, get outside of Rochester and go to a college and maybe earn a degree and then come back and do what I'm doing and give back, then we can keep the cycle going, you know. So hopefully that, you know, those are some of the things that we can, you know, look for in the future.
I think one of the oldest tricks, and I think Paul Miller mentioned this, he called it the Willie Lynch syndrome the other week. But I think one of the oldest tricks is really that powers that be keep us separate, and that the charter sector has to begin to see themselves as a sector, that together we're representing over 8,000 students, that together with more than 14 school systems and 27 school buildings, that we're doing this together, that we have to fight for common causes. And it's not right that you should have to fight so hard for a building, and that should be a right of yours. We went down to Indianapolis earlier this year and took some people down there, and I know Paul Miller's been down there as well. And they have, you know, district schools, they have charter schools, they have innovation schools. But what they've done is they've all partnered with the city and the business community and area colleges, and they've decided we're going to do what's best for kids. They put the kids first. And now if a district school in Indianapolis is not functioning properly and educating them properly, that building can go to a charter. And I've seen some charter schools down there and innovation schools, which are kind of a hybrid, that they have 110,000 square foot buildings.
Wow.
Only 60% filled because they're attracting more and more and more students. And I'm like imagining what we can do in Rochester if they gave you the space to do it. And I'm just plugging UPrep right now because
right.
You all don't even have the space and you're not using any of that for an excuse. And I can't help but wonder, and I want you to comment on this, I can't help but wonder how much of that is a life lesson for your students. That no matter how bad things are, no matter how tight life seems to be, that there are no excuses. You can learn, you can succeed, and you can be a leader.
Yeah, you hit it right on the nail. You know, our students know that, you know, they don't have a lot of resources, but it builds character. You know, and I think that's the number one thing, is that they know that, you know, adversity is always going to happen. You know, even when if they go on to college or go on to a trade, sometime at a point in their life, they're going to have some adversity, and they know how to handle it and they know how to push through it. So I think that's, you know, teaching them a lesson of not having everything at your hands, that is going to make you stronger.
You know, I just think, how do we get the people to change their mindset and to break this break this curse that's in this city, right? And break this mindset and this impoverished and the mindset of those folks. Like, even quite a few, not all, you know, quite a few, several of the board members, several of district leaderships, they have this mindset that it needs to be that us versus them. It needs to be this division instead of, and yeah, we're out here spitting facts and people don't like that and people are probably annoyed by us because of it. But at the end of the day, we really don't want the division. We really want to come together, and we're only speaking the way we are because we're the little guy and we're underserved, and so we're trying to use our voice to say, hey, this could be a good option. We're not really doing it to put anybody down or to hurt anybody, but at the same time, we know that people don't want us here doing what we're doing. Mm. We know that people don't want the charter schools to be successful here. They want kids to come back because of the money and the politics, But how do we get them to change? And what do you think, what commitment does UPrep have towards helping change the mindset of some of the folks in this community? And what does that look like, Ryan?
Well, I think, first off, what we're doing right now, we're creating a podcast, and hopefully, you know, people listen, and we just keep pressing, keep talking about the things that need to be changed. I think that's the only way that we're gonna probably see change is that we keep making it relevant. You know, every time, you know, we have an opportunity to talk about it, you know, if it's just with other people, if it's like on a radio show, is it on TV, you know, the more and more you keep pushing it, then maybe we can brainwash people to say, hey, listen, we need your help. Let's come together and let's make this happen.
So tell me this, and I'm going to give you this question, then I'll spin it over to Paul Miller to close us out on some things. But tell me this, if you looked into your spiritual crystal ball in the next 5 to 7 years, two things. One, what does a successful U Prep look like 5 to 7 years from now? And then two, what's in the landscape for Brother Raheem? What can we expect to see from him personally in the next few years? After that, Paul Miller, if you can close us out, man, I want to know what you got going on, what's coming up, and honestly, what you think support organizations like ours can do to really fulfill the dream that we're all talking about.
Well, the answer to your first question, you know, what I would like to see U Prep look like, I would like to have, like I said, have our own facilities. You know, healthy enrollment, you know, even in, I think Dr. Miller was saying that even we can add more kids to more of some of the, you know, 6th to 12th grade. Facilities, you know, successful sports teams, and just making, you know, positive black males, you know, going out to be able to do positive stuff, maybe, you know, going on to college or trade. You know, just keep doing that, but just keep doing it on a higher level every year. So that would be one of the successful things I would see. And then, I don't know how long I got left, you know.
I'm getting kind of old,
you know. The one thing I do like about our school is that we are promoting, like, you know, younger leaders. You know, because we're not going to be around forever.
There you go. That's
we're not going to we're not going to be around forever. So the one thing that we do is, you know, I try to mentor, you know, all the guys. And, you know, I have 23 years of experience. So I try to, you know, mentor them and give them and put them in, you know, situations where, hey, I'm not here, but I am here. But how are you going to handle it? Yeah. You know, so because like I said, you know, we're not going to be around forever, but we want that tradition and we want that to keep going on.
Other generations haven't done.
Right.
Right. Each one teach one, right?
Exactly.
You know, the brother's not that old because I saw him do a box jump. What was it? A four-foot, five-foot box that he did off his vertical the other day?
Yeah, he got it too.
It was rather impressive. I can't even hate on the brother.
I still play ball. You know, and the young kids, well, my staff, they joke with me. And, you know, they say I'm not human. They say it's impossible the things that I can do right now. And I just tell them, like, you know, you take care of your body, right. You work out, and you do these things, you know, and have some mental toughness,
right.
You know. So,
wow.
You know, as we think about it and close out today, you know, I think we have to look in our own backyard too. And I think in the charter schools, I think we got to continue to unite and be a stronger voice and not just speaking independently anymore. And I think that's part of the problem, because there's a lot of success independently and there's a lot of people doing their own things. And there's some people that still have a Rochester district mentality who have shifted over to lead the charter schools as well. And so, you know, and that's not everybody, right? Some people have transitioned and shifted into the larger framework of what operating and running the school is. And I think we have to look there first. I think we have to look there and how do we unite? How do we come together? And how do we stand as a unit? And now we have almost 8,500 students and become a voice and become a force for this community and not just working in the silos that's being worked in currently. And I think it's too many people are worried about their own results and not worried about their brothers and sisters' results, right? And I think that's part of the problem. Is so what can you learn from U Prep? What can you learn from Virtus? What can you learn from Exploration, Discovery, whatever, you know, whatever schools are out there, Innova is the one, whatever we can learn from these schools, and how do we support each other? And how do we support each other? How do we convene? How do we do things a little differently? And I'm hoping that leaders will get together. So that's one thing that I definitely think. And then outside of that, I think the shift has to be from us continuing the good fight and not giving up on it, you know, and not giving up. And even though people don't want to hear from us, people don't want to hear what we have to say because it's different than what they're used to. It's making them uncomfortable. They got to learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And so we're going to continue this fight. We're going to continue to do what we got to do. And we're going to continue to fight it on different levels for equity. You know, we're working on a lawsuit that will try to get equity because currently right now, I know New York State facility aid, charter schools don't get facility aid except if you're in the New York City area. Yep. And so it's like New York City is his own little country, his own little state there, and gets facility aid or gets a free facility. They have a little bit more of a partnership and a relationship with the traditional public versus the rest of the state.
Absolutely.
That's not equal. That's right. Not equity. Right. So we're pursuing a lawsuit for that, and we're trying to get some equity and funding. And let's say they get $2,700 a student if they don't go into a building, right? If we had $2,700 per student times 8,000 or 8,500, that's somewhere around $24 million extra for the schools. Mm-hmm. You think that the schools wouldn't benefit from $24 million if it's spent correctly, which again, in the charter schools, the funding is monitored very, very tightly. So for all those who like to have rumors and other bases, you know what, you got to do audits yearly. You got comptroller audits. You got a board you got to answer to. You got to answer to your authorizer. You got to answer to your mamas and your daddies. Like, there's all kinds of people you got to answer to. So funding is not typically an issue. It has to be done the right way. And I can encourage that as a team, we continue to keep fighting for the right way. And that's just don't give up. You know what? You may fail, but fall still fighting. And then you got to get up and see it through. So until next time, we're going to keep
moving the needle for you, boy.
Thanks for listening to this podcast on the WDKX Podcast Network.
Provided by Vision Automotive.